Hello, heroes. Welcome to Modifier. I'm your host, Megan Dornbrock. Hey there, heroes. This week we're talking to Jason Pitt about his upcoming Kickstarter for SIG, a multiplanar fantasy RPG. Jason is an Ottawa game designer, a good pal, and plays one excellent demon geisha in Blades in the Dark. I'm so happy to finally get a chance to talk to him about this project and to share it with you. The thing about SIG is that it began as a setting for his storytelling game system, Spark. Spark has quite a few available settings, from neo-Nihon, a shogunate sci-fi, to the Enlightened Man, Renaissance superheroes. But SIG, the multiplanar setting, really took the Spark mechanics and ran with them. And that's what we're focusing on this week. Jason has some excellent experience and thoughts on supporting setting with mechanics and how to get there. Let's get to the show. All right. Joining me this week is Jason Pitt. And Jason, why don't you introduce yourself a little? Tell us where we might know you from.
Hi there. I'm Jason Pitt from Genesis of Legend Publishing. I'm somewhat prolific.
a little bit.
Some people might know me from my podcast, the RPG Design Panelcast, which actually releases a ton of game design and publishing related panels and seminars with varying levels of audio quality. Others might know me from a few of my projects. I published in 2013 a game called the Spark role-playing game. Mm-hmm. Posthuman Pathways, which wound up winning an Emmy in 2014. And I kickstarted a game called SIG, The City Between, in 2015. And awesome. I was even a judge for the Indie Groundbreaker Awards at Gen Con 2015. So, yeah.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that part. Very nice. And you're about to be kickstarting another SIG.
Yes, because I am a masochist, I'm continuing to work on new projects and expand old ones. So, as is the tradition with Kickstarters, I'm mm-hmm. talking to a bunch of smart folks and using it to shamelessly plug my own game. my new project is going to be titled SIG, The Manual of the Primes, which is legally distinct from any other planar fantasy role-playing game setting that might exist. Long story short, I kickstarted a supplement to Spark titled SIG, mm-hmm. The City Between, way back in the fall of 2015, right? Right?
That sounds right.
That sounds right. Mm-hmm. And it went off very well. And I was super pleased by the reaction I was getting. But, of course, this means I hit a bunch of stretch goals with brilliant people.
Mm-hmm. How dare you.
Some of which might be hosts of shows on the One Shot Podcast Network.
Mm-hmm.
And I got more content, and I kept on making more stuff, and I couldn't stop. And this sort of coincided with running out of physical copies of the first edition of SIG, The City Between.
Oh, wow.
So I decided to bite the bullet and see if other people would be interested in me producing more stuff. So I'm kickstarting something called The Manual of the Primes, which is, for scale, SIG, The City Between was a 112-page softcover setting book supplement for mm-hmm. Spark. That required Spark to play. It was a lot of fun, but it was a really nice, small, very visually attractive book. Mm-hmm. This is actually, if I manage to reach the funding goal for this project, I'm planning on printing a 240-page full-color hardcover book.
Oh, wow.
Standalone mm-hmm. core book.
Oh, okay.
Everything you need to play. And all of the stretch goal content from the last Kickstarter, including roughly 10,000 words worth of new content, new worlds written by some really fantastic stretch goal authors. A full breakdown of the city between this Mobius strip city of SIG. including a whole host of neighborhoods and the characters who live there, an adventure, and even refined mechanics. So I'm bringing in the mechanics from the Spark role-playing game, and I'm customizing them and changing them to fit the setting.
Cool.
And yeah, so I'm super excited about the idea of producing this.
Yeah.
Also, it'd be my first hardcover book, which is a thing.
Yeah, it's like a rite of passage.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited about it too. And those mechanics that you have been changing and adapting from Spark are definitely one of the things we're going to talk about today. So I guess why don't we backtrack a little bit and talk about what Spark is?
Fantastic. So I designed my first game in part out of an appreciation of all the previous games I'd run into, and in part looking to focus on certain kinds of play experiences. I wanted to focus on collaborative world building as a major element. All of the good bits from the Dresden Files role-playing game system, which is Evil Hat's Fate Core game, mm-hmm. and a number of the other similar games in that vein that really showed me how to make an engaging and interesting world at the table. Because, quite frankly, I love the idea of creating fantastic settings. I mean, it's just super engaging. I'm a fiction writer at heart. So I built, a system that let us create a world at the table together. The other half of it was it's a game about challenging your beliefs. That is to say, it's almost an empiricist game where everyone brings things to the table, questions and perspectives that they want to get more information about.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, let's say that I'm personally dealing with a concern about nationalism, and my belief is that nationalism is a poison. I'm going through the game, as my character would have a belief like that, and I would be rewarded whenever I create situations that bring up the topic, either supporting it or refuting it.
Oh, okay. Interacting with it at all, then.
Exactly. So you're bringing in a whole host of these. Your characters have biases one way or the other, but it's an open-minded dialogue and exploration of the various topics. And when you get enough of the reward, the juicy, juicy influence that is the prize for exploring these beliefs, then you can change your beliefs and improve your characters.
Nice.
In negotiation with other people at the table. So it's this back and forth of exploration and challenging your convictions and ideals, and all these like complicated moral judgments and societal judgments. That's sort of the second pillar of Spark, which functionally translates to Spark is a game about exploring and creating new worlds,
mm-hmm.
where belief is power, and all the universe is made out of belief and modified by belief. So what you believe is inherently power.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, some people will notice there's some similarities in there to some other systems and settings.
Ow.
I'm not going to say that I was a fan of the combo of Mage, the Ascension, and the Planescape setting from TSR, but kind of, yeah.
Never would have guessed.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what Spark was.
Mm-hmm.
And when I wound up kickstarting it, I was looking for stretch goals originally. And I was just writing up, we'll have new settings. Those are fun. Oh, if I get X amount, I'll make one called Sig, the City of Keys.
Mm-hmm.
Which was pretty much me realizing, oh crap, I made the right mechanics for the Planescape setting. Maybe I should, try my hand at that.
Yeah. And was Sig, like, the first setting that came to mind? Because I know there are some other settings for Spark that you've got.
SIG wasn't the first, it was just the biggest.
The big, okay.
Because, so for instance, one of the other published settings I've got is the Enlightened Man, Renaissance Superheroes setting, produced by Brian Engard.
Okay.
Which was, you know, let's deal with the world-building element of what happens if superheroes show up in Renaissance Europe.
Oh, boy.
Because modern superheroes are functionally just super cops.
Yeah.
What happens when you don't have police as an element of society? Oh, they're working for the church and merchant princes? And, like, you're sending Cyclops to wander on over to destroy the fortifications and take out an entire army of Prussia? I mean, like...
Why not?
Like, you've got Storm working for Florence against Venice to screw up their shipping? Like,
oh boy.
This is some super interesting world building.
Yeah.
And because it's Renaissance, there's so much philosophy out there and like so many big philosophical questions. So yeah, it seemed like a really good, interesting setting that would match the system. Mm-hmm. Both that and actually for Fate Core, sort of depending on how you want to spin the setting.
Yeah, you've got that module for Fate Core, which did that take much reworking, or did it just sort of fall into place for Fate?
It pretty much fell into place. It was intentionally designed as such, to find a setting that would work both for the philosophical exploration and the high action, high octane gondola chases. So, I mean, both of them work.
Mm-hmm.
They just tell slightly different stories because the mechanics are designed to focus on different stories.
And then you end up working on SIG as a stretch goal, and that just sort of explodes.
Yep, yep. to be fair, I didn't actually hit the stretch goal on the first Kickstarter. I just started working on it on the back end.
You just sort of wanted it enough. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the point when I realized, oh, crap, I really have to work on this.
Uh-huh. It just won't leave you alone.
Yeah. No. No. I tried. I said, go away setting. I don't need more work.
Yeah, but you're you, so.
Yeah.
It just sort of happens. So I've read through how the mechanics work in SIG, but I'm less familiar with them in Spark. Did you have to change much?
So, yes and no.
Okay. Yeah, so, let's talk about how they work in Spark.
Okay. So, in Spark, the basic principle is you've got beliefs that give you influence.
Okay.
You use this influence to pay the price of victory, because there's always a price to win.
Mm-hmm.
To increase your chances of winning a conflict.
Okay.
Or to change people's beliefs.
Okay.
There's a set of four attributes, body, heart, mind, and spark, that each represent sort of different arenas of play. And you've got a set of freeform talents that are just, you know, science as a broad talent.
Okay.
Biology as a common talent, and parasitology as a deep talent, giving you sort of different levels of bonuses in combos. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm a biologist, so, you know, all my examples. So it works. And as I played through it, I noticed a few things emerging, and I noticed what parts of the system people were focusing on and which ones they weren't. So I sort of refocused and streamlined things a bit. So with SIG, I've changed it so that there's only two attributes. One that represents your character, and one that represents the world around them.
Hmm. Okay.
So it's a bit more streamlined on that fashion. So direct and meta, functionally.
Yeah.
Decide where you want to land on the balance. And all of recovery is done through something called an interlude. Mm. Interlude scenes are you spend some of your influence, and then the two of us have a one-on-one conversation, you know, on a rooftop talking about, I don't know why I'm having so many these troubles with my husband, and it's just so hard. And you ask questions either to the player or the character, and therefore they are given the opportunity to talk about those, to answer those questions. Sort of just get these slower paced, more introspective personal moments.
Yeah.
Sort of to punctuate all of the action. Because the dynamic of Spark tends to be very much a things explode. Now we're running from this exploding building into this tense negotiation. Now we're going from that into... So, like, it tends to go big, big, big. So having these quiet moments was something I felt was really important to Sig. And I'll get to why that's important in a bit.
Sure.
So these interludes actually let people recover any harm and damage they may suffer from any of the big scenes. So functionally, it means that the only way that you can succeed in conflicts in a structural, sustained way is by having these quiet moments of introspection, which you can only have if you're confronting your beliefs, either supporting or refuting them. Mm. So it's a lovely little cycle that just moves through of fight to explore what you believe in, get rewarded, and then spend that reward to recover.
Cool. Okay.
Now, the reason why I found that was so important was because one area where Sig stands apart from the primary inspiration of Planescape is that it focuses a bit more on issues of family, of faith, of politics. For scale, one of the key pieces of inspiration is the comic Saga by Image.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of discussion on issues of family and familial relationships and where are people coming from. Like the setting itself is inherently a sort of extreme version of a cosmopolitan city with waves after waves of migration and newcomers coming into the city, with old groups being displaced, with the streets themselves changing every couple months kind of thing, as the plane of flame loses the tether to the city, and now the plane of ice is coming in, so all the fires that were throughout the city get put out, and now the roads reform into a crystalline network, and ice over. Like, that kind of thing. So it's very much meant to be dealing with how do cities and societies and subcultures change. And let's just ramp that up. So I really wanted to have those interludes as a fundamental element so that we'd have a chance to get into people's heads and deal very much at the personal level instead of at the cosmic level. Like, I think the ideal kind of story in Sig is where a character is having a heart-to-heart talk with their deadbeat godfather. Literally godfather. who has been failing to actually, you know, take care of their divine progeny. I wish I could have been there with you, but I was kind of fighting a demon war. I could have helped you, Dad. You didn't have to leave me alone. But, divine politics. That's the nice kind of story. Sort of that nice mixture of really big scale and really personal scale.
Yeah. Oh, that's
so
great.
Yeah. And then, you know, issues of faith, which strangely wraps up with deicide fairly frequently. Shout out to One Shot. just sort of basic, almost Blades in the Darkish political intrigue and knife fighting. It's a delightful flavor that I don't see that often. So I wanted to make sure that all the mechanics are reinforced.
Very cool. So that is something that Sig has, those interludes that Spark doesn't.
Correct.
Cool.
And there's more to it, actually. The other half of it is less in the direct mechanics and more in the procedures. So one of the other things I found was a challenge was that a tendency of NPCs to be loosely held. And I wanted to focus on these relationships, be they professional, familial, or religious. So you effectively, I mean, picture a game of Fiasco with those index cards between you and your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Each of you contributes something from your character to the NPC between the two of you. And that's how all of you know each other, through other people.
Okay, very cool.
So, you know, I'm a feral from the Plane of Freedom. So I'm going to say that Burial to the right of me is also feral. So she's my sister.
Okay.
You're one of the League of Exterminators. So you're going to say that Burial is also a member of the League of Exterminators.
Gotcha, yeah.
So now we both have something in common with this character, and the three of us can have this interesting social dynamic going on. And then you just keep doing that, so everyone is sort of hooked into each other and really anchored in the setting. And the GM has something to, some voices to use to interact with people.
Sure, yeah.
And these are all sort of, I mean, frequently people don't pay as much attention to procedures of play and NPCs nearly to the same extent as they do, you know, the base resolution mechanisms.
Yeah.
But I find they're so useful to making the actual play experience at the table.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Having run my fair share of games, giving players the stakes in the NPCs alone, I can see doing wonders for how much they interact with and care about these characters. So that's awesome.
Yeah. There's even one last thing that I use at the start of every game that is just remarkably efficient.
Oh?
So you know how there was index cards between everyone?
Mm-hmm.
There's also one in the middle of the table for this one character that everyone's connected to.
Oh, okay.
Everyone adds bits of their character onto it.
Oh. Oh, boy.
In the first scene, they're dead.
Oh. Okay.
Now get started. Try to figure that out.
Oh. Oh, boy.
Dang.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, It does a really good job of kickstarting things for some reason.
Oh, I wonder why.
And it also sort of anchors things on, like, oh yeah, this city is a super messy and complicated place that, like, there's a lot of crime going on here.
Sure.
Very crimey.
So since you do that with that common NPC, do you find in a lot of games that they become centered around finding out what happened?
They start that way, and they don't last that way.
Oh, okay. That's really interesting.
It's a really strong inciting incident.
Mm-hmm.
But after time, because you never actually developed a strong relationship with that character, it doesn't last nearly as long.
Interesting. Yeah, I was kind of curious about that, since that's sort of what Noirlandia is built around, is you have this character that you've didn't exactly build together, but started off with, you knew them, and they're dead. So that's the game, is basically figuring out what happened. But I can see how investigating, like starting to investigate that, like how did you know them, what else was involved, can lead to some other very interesting threads that you'd want to follow.
Right. Yeah, that's so it tends cool. to be, it turns into they're a symptom of a problem.
Mm, okay.
Not, we need to, you know, get closure on this one person.
Interesting. Okay.
And, I mean, that does some really interesting things. The other half of it is, as a GM, you're playing through the voices of all these other NPCs. So their interests come in.
Okay.
And you'll, you know, frequently get two of the other NPCs hated the guts of the central NPC.
Okay.
So because you're always coming from all the other voices around the table, it means that you can focus in on sort of their perspectives and personalities a bit more.
Cool. Okay.
It's also, there's a lot of murder going on in this city. So, I mean...
What's one more?
Exactly.
Great. So then all of those other NPCs are giving you ways to help engage with the beliefs of these player characters. And beliefs in Sig, just the power of belief, basically changes the world, right?
Yep. Like,
okay.
So, functionally, the idea behind it is that every one of the eternal planes of existence, be they elemental, like the plane of flame, mm-hmm. plane of ice, be they ideological, the plane of justice or the plane of tyranny, mm-hmm. or conceptual, the plane of shadows, the plane of lore, all of these planes each are bound by one fundamental belief. Mm. And on the planes, those beliefs are actual absolutes. So on the plane of lore, knowledge is power. When you are physically there, knowledge is power is just a universal constant.
Oh, okay.
In Sig, when the plane of lore is connected to Sig, it bleeds into the city. And now the sort of broader question of is knowledge power sort of seeps into daily life. And as the GM, you know how all of the players normally have three beliefs? Well, the GM has the three beliefs of the planes of existence connected to Sig.
Ooh,
at any
okay.
point in time.
Cool.
So I start setting up situations of, is knowledge power? Is knowledge weakness? And I try to arrange for these kinds of conversations and situations. And you've always got three of these coming in at any point in time. So, yeah.
So the beliefs that the planes have, they are always, like, they are constants. That's not something that the players help build.
Right.
How do the players come up with their beliefs?
Usually the player beliefs are related to those three core elements of family, faith, and politics.
Oh, okay.
So it's effectively, what's something about your family or your heritage that you believe in? What's something about your faith in your ideology that you believe in? And what's something about your politics and business and professional life that you believe in?
So is there any room for them to potentially overlap with any of the planar beliefs?
Or oh, absolutely. Just sort
of... Okay.
So all of the sort of ethnic heritages, mm-hmm. Religious groups, and political factions are actually all tied to the various planes of existence. And so, for instance, the plane of flame, which is just my go-to example, by the way. I mean, I don't mean to make it like everything's on fire. Mm-hmm. Only half the time. So the plane of flame has a group called the Cleaners, who believe very much in purification. And they are half incinerator garbage men and half healers, because they burn away sickness and illness, and they deal with all the bodies in the alleys.
Mm-hmm.
So they are connected and strengthened by the plane of flame. So, you know, two steps removed, any belief that's related to the Cleaners is going to be related to somewhat in some way to the plane of flame and that sort of setting belief.
Okay. All right.
Likewise, I've got a love god from the plane of Earth, Morkana, the Sheltering Stone, because nothing says love god like a 20-story tall primordial god of stone who wants to protect the fragile flowers because it misses family.
Oh.
Like,
oh boy.
Yeah, those are the kinds of stories I'm looking at and going, ooh, I want more of those.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, during play, because it's a world-building game, you can just create new worlds. You know? Oh, we hear there's a MacGuffin over on, in the Alabaster Dynasty. All right, so let's make the Alabaster Dynasty.
Sounds good.
And then you just toss things in the pot and then make a world out of that.
Awesome, yeah. You've got all the planes that we've mentioned, but there's also all sorts of sub-planes and smaller shards of realities. Yeah.
Yeah, and prime worlds, which are effectively just... I describe Sig as a setting of infinite primes and eternal planes.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, the planes of existence are somewhat finite in number, but expansive and super powerful. And then all of the mortal realms are prime worlds. So, for instance, there's the setting of Crystallia, which is a world that believes that what is done can never be undone. Perfection is the only peace, and you can depend only on yourself.
Oh, boy.
So, a entire community of perfectionistic, super fragile crystal people.
That's rough. Yep.
Yeah. So, like, that's a world made by Alex Roberts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's really good. So, being able to, you know, explore and create these prime worlds is super good because you get to sort of open up and explore new societies. And just, you could spend your entire time just, like, doing a sliders thing of, we're just going to go to the new world of the day.
Yeah.
And we're just going to explore, 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 explore. And just see what we feel like as we keep on looking, prospecting for new ideas in the various prime worlds. So that's actually why I call it the Manual of the Primes, because it actually engages and allows for that.
Awesome. Yeah, so is it going to give a lot of, like, starters for prime worlds?
Yeah, it's giving some starters for prime worlds, a set of 8 pre-generated ones, one of which is Earth. Specifically Montreal.
Of course.
And it gives you all the tools that were originally in the Spark role-playing game for world building. And it just sort of gives a streamlined version of that.
Are the prime worlds something that only the GM is coming up with, or is everybody building these places?
Everyone creates them at the table. So it's a beautiful example of where mechanics and procedures are hooked into the play experiences. Here's the dirty secret of why I do collaborative world building all the time. It means that all of the players get invested super fast and super deep.
Yeah.
Because if you've made the Gilded Lilies trade syndicate, now you care a lot about the Gilded Lilies. You're like, this is your setting. You have your stamp on it. As opposed to just reading it in some book, a list of, you know, potential trade syndicates you might have. Like, one of these it grabs you by the spleen and won't let go. So that's why I'm a collaborative world-building junkie. And it's totally a mechanic that everyone should steal and hack into their games. Hint, hint.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to argue with that. I agree. We've done similar things in a lot of games, just passing control of, like, tell me who this NPC is. You know, like, what's this place that you stayed at? Like, you know, even small little pieces like that get people, get players so much more invested because, like, they built the inn, you know? So, like,
exactly,
they're here for it. Yeah, it's awesome. So that's very cool. So this sort of, we were talking about hacking mechanics to reflect the setting, or in this case, you kind of built mechanics that led you to a setting specifically. Like, have you done anything else quite like this before? Like, made your mechanics better fit a setting or something like that?
So, I mean, in part, I do this every time I design a game.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm just going to selfishly ramble on about a couple other games that are currently in the works.
Yes.
Because I've got a lot of projects on the go. I was working with Mark Richardson on his own game Headspace and helping him find sort of the core of that experience. And he designed a really good game that took the core of emotions and baked that hard into the mechanics.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, why are you failing? Because you're making bad decisions because you're emotional creatures. I mean, that's a really compelling sort of mechanical bridge to some really interesting play experiences. I'm just going to keep plugging Mark because he's a fantastic designer.
Yeah.
And I'm cooperating with him on a new project as well. So,
Yours or his?
Yes, we have a new one that we're working on together.
Ooh, okay.
So this new game that we're working on is currently called Fate of the Galaxy. This came from a long discussion and a long campaign of a hybrid of Burning Empires and Diaspora. It was a space opera Empires, Leaders of Humanity style game that They ran locally for a bit over a year, with two GMs and six players,
Okay.
because the system was very heavy.
Oh, hell yeah.
And we enjoyed the outcome, but it practically killed everyone to get there
Oh,
because the system was too heavy. Like, it was designed to be a tightly scripted, limited scope narrative, with the Burning Empire system. And we just exploded it open to an entire galaxy.
oh boy. Oof, yeah.
So it was one of those, the system didn't align well with the setting and the type of story we were aiming to tell. So we decided that we would design our own. And so we carefully looked at all the various options on the table. What systems would tell these kinds of stories would allow for scaling up and down in scope from high-level political discussions between all the various rulers of humanity and the captain of some starship stranded on a planet with an alien and having to beat him with a rock and a handmade gun. Like, the full range of science fiction, space opera kind of stories.
Sure, you're just looking for everything.
So we settled on Fate Core as our framework
Oh,
because the
okay.
Fate Fractal works remarkably well for that. Partially inspired by some of Tracy Barnett's work with Exploding Rogue, with their Iron Edda work.
Yeah.
World of Metal and Bone, if I recall. War of Metal and Bone. I
Yeah.
always mix war and world up. But it shows how you can handle differences of scale very well.
Very cool.
So we took that as an anchor. And we looked, oh, we can describe entire systems of the galaxy with a single aspect. Okay. And we can describe characters who have opinions on galactic strife with an aspect.
Yeah.
Okay. And we can reward people for having terrible home lives because they're sacrificing their personal lives in favor of saving 2 billion people on Omicron Theta with Fate Point Compels. Okay. Yeah, the mechanics really did a great job of reinforcing the ideas we had and giving us exactly the right level of mechanical detail for the kinds of broad strokes, galactic scale stories we were looking to tell.
Oh, that's awesome.
So Fate of the Galaxy is currently under work, and we're hoping to get an ashcan version of that out at some point in the near future.
Okay, we'll have to keep an eye out for that.
And the other project I'm working on, which is very much like, let's try to marry the setting with the system and whatnot, is a
Yeah.
game called Circles of Power, which is on one hand, a game about wizards
Okay.
and trying to replicate the experience that was promised in D&D Second Edition with, like, oh, you're going to be a wizard. You get to research magic and create magic items and train apprentices and use magic all the time, that kind of thing.
All
And on
right.
the other hand, it's a game about marginalized communities.
Oh, okay.
And, it's sort of replicating the experience of classic X-Men of, you're wizards in a world that hate you. You're saving the dominant society because it's the only thing that will help your own marginalized communities, even
Oh,
though
wow.
the dominant society has treated you like shit. But all, you're the only ones with Fireball. You're the only ones who can keep the demons away.
Yeah.
So the society has to give you a bit more respect, even though they don't want to. So to sort of create those complicated, messy social dynamics and sort of emphasize the twin pillars of the community issues, the challenges of marginalization, the limited resources available for solving some problems, and the magical nature of wizards and improving spells and all those things. I latched onto the Apocalypse World framework because it does a
Oh,
really
okay.
solid job of closing off options.
Sure.
I mean, it's the thing that I love about Monster Hearts, which at the time of recording is on Kickstarter, but may no longer be on Kickstarter at this point.
Possibly. If it is, there will be a link.
But everyone should have Monster Hearts.
They should.
So it does a really good job of giving you a bunch of tools. And all of these tools are bad. You don't have a healthy option at the start in Monster Hearts.
Yeah.
So you can't make someone feel beautiful until you've leveled up. Until then, you can shut someone down or lash out at them violently or turn them on. But the tools you've got nothing but hammers, and you've got a screw in front of you that you're trying to deal with. And it's like, ah, crap, how do I deal with this?
Not well. Yeah.
So those kinds of mechanical choices tie in super well to the framework of marginalization and oppressive societies.
Yeah.
Which is why I thought, you know, these mechanics tie in really well to this setting and game idea.
That's awesome. So having done this a few times, then how, for folks who may have a setting that they really want to work within, do you have any advice for how to assess that? You know, how to examine it for what you need to get out of the mechanics? Or because these last couple examples, you've found existing systems like Fate Core or Apocalypse World that do some things that really reinforce your setting. How do you even begin to take that apart and look at that?
Step one is play a lot of games. Playing more games, which is the hardest homework ever, honestly.
Yeah, right.
More importantly, what I try to do is I try to look at the desired play experience. I focus in on the specific emotional reactions I'm looking for from players. The hard choices, where are the challenging role-playing choices going to be? What are those key moments that I want all the stories about this game to be about? Sig is all about that story of someone trying getting back together with their deadbeat godparent.
Yeah.
That's the kind of story that I wanted to focus in on. And I just, everything points towards the sort of target anecdote of the desired play experience.
Okay.
And then when I'm doing this, one of the things I do is I sort of put that in one column, and then I go through a bunch of other game systems, and I try to write down what kinds of experiences those produce, what the various tools are provided, where they're strong and where they're weak. Usually by looking at the body of work, you're able to see which things work well and which things don't. Like, beautiful example is it's super hard to make fate work well with horror.
Oh, really?
Because horror, in many ways, is tied to disempowerment, the feeling of hopelessness, the feeling of being overwhelmed and unable to overcome a particular challenge.
Sure.
Whereas fate is inherently tied to empower characters.
Oh, okay.
So you've always got a way out in fate. Everything is fair. And that sort of clashes with horror. By contrast, dread is beautiful for horror.
Yep.
Because guess what? Nope, it's not fair. Yep, it's inevitable. Good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah. But dread is totally the wrong system to use for, you know, these plucky upstarts who are going to change the world. Unless you want it to be a really tragic story where it's, no, fighting never helps. Just don't have hope. Just give that up. Like, unless you want that kind of story.
Yeah, all right. So play a lot of games, which I think is homework we can all begrudgingly accept.
I mean, as the consolation prize, you should theoretically have fun doing so.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Go to lots of conventions, play lots of games.
Yeah.
Try to just wrangle the schedules of 3 to 5 adults. Good luck with that one. Cool. What else do we need to know about the Kickstarter?
So theoretically, I will be running that from the end of January to middle to the end of February of 2017, because we record this audio and it stays up forever. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to gather enough support to be able to do a full print run of the shiny, shiny books. And I hope that I have a few of your kind and generous listeners to help me out on that front, because
Oh, I'm
I
sure. I think we can do that.
good.
Awesome. Yeah, so this episode will actually be up fairly soon, which hopefully isn't too soon.
Oh, no, not at all.
Cool. Yeah, and we'll add links to the one shot playthroughs that we've got, and we'll just keep an eye on our Twitter and your Twitter, which, speaking of, where can people find you online to keep up with the news about this Kickstarter and other games that you're making?
I spend far too much time on Twitter
Nice.
at Genesis of Legend. One word, naturally
Okay.
enough. I'm also quite frequently on Google Plus for all of your gaming needs. And I'm actually planning on running, breaking news. I'm planning on actually running a set of online sessions of SIG during the campaign.
Ooh.
It's all going to be first come, first serve, so you have been warned.
All right.
Feel free to join on in, and I will show you what the little setting is about, and we can get playing. Like I said, play more games.
Yeah. Very cool.
Start with mine.
Yeah, and this will be the first on many people's lists, I'm sure. We'll fight for it.
Excellent.
So, cool. Well, thank you so much for being on. This has been great.
No, thank you.
And hopefully helpful for some heroes out there.
And if anyone ever has any questions, feel free to just drop me a line. You can also email me at genesisoflegend@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks again to Jason for being on the show and for literally the best homework assignment we could ask for. All his contact info is in the show notes if you want to pick his brain. Be sure to also listen to the nerds on One Shot play Sig in a three-part epic, which is in the show notes as well. Also, if this mechanics and settings conversation interested you, you might like the Genre Bacon episode of Stop, Hack, and Roll. I guess I'll throw in a link to that too. That's it for this week, heroes. You can find Modifier on Twitter at ModifierPodcast or at the headquarters at modifierpodcast.tumblr.com. You can send comments, questions, or contribution suggestions to modifierpodcast@gmail.com. If you like the show, please consider leaving a review on iTunes, as that helps more people find us. Modifier is a proud member of the One Shot Podcast Network, an amazing family of RPG podcasts that includes incredible shows like One Shot, Campaign, Backstory, and Talking Tabletop. Modifier's theme music was created by my favorite Bothan, Kat Greenfield, whose myriad talents are on display at katgreenfield.com. Join me again in 2 weeks for another episode of Modifier. See you then!